pull my girlfriend out of the way as the bus comes bouncing up onto the sidewalk, smashing into the building we just exited 30 seconds ago. We end up lying on the sidewalk, the front wheel of the bus barely a foot away. Inside the bus, people are screaming. One woman jumps up and pounds on the door, but the bus driver isn't in any state to open it. There's a guy munching on his neck. Another woman with cloudy eyes and blood smeared all over her mouth appears behind the screaming woman at the door. Blood splatters the glass panels as teeth rip open skin and arteries. I look around at the city street, unable to comprehend what's happening, even though it has been going on for a good half an hour now. Abandoned cars clutter the street. Sounds of gunfire come from all around, only overtaken by the screams and shouts of terrified people. A small group of people run down the opposite sidewalk, chased by two zombies. That's what they are, after all. There's no doubting it. They're fucking zombies. The guy in the lead has a pistol, and, without looking, he aims it backward and fires. Only he doesn't shoot one of the zombies. He shoots a teenage girl that was running behind him. She falls to the ground, dead from the shot to the chest. Looking over his shoulder, he sees what he's done. He comes to a stop, staring in abject horror at the dead girl. The rest of his group keeps running, leaving him to his fate. A moment later, the two zombies crash into him, tackling him to the ground. One of them bites his neck, the other latches onto his arm. All this happens in the span of a few breaths. Maya and I scramble up off the ground and resume our run down the sidewalk. I'm sweating in the summer sun. My hand is slick as I grab hold of Maya. We turn a corner, just a block from the sporting goods store that is our destination. There's chaos here too. It's everywhere. A window in the building towering over us breaks, and we look up, seeing two bodies falling down. They land on top of an SUV, breaking the windows and denting the roof. The one who landed first is clearly dead, but the other one is a zombie. Although half its limbs are broken, it turns its head toward us, snapping its jaws and snarling as it tries to use its broken body to get to us. Apparently, they don't want dead flesh. Even newly dead people are of no interest. They want the living. We move fast, feet crunching on glass as we hurry down the sidewalk. The sporting goods store is on the corner. As we duck inside, the thrumming sound of a 50 caliber machine gun grows closer. We crouch down and look out the windows as a military Humvee goes tearing down the block. The soldier manning the 50 cal is screaming as he fires into a horde of zombies running after the vehicle. The massive bullets blow many of the zombies apart, severing heads and limbs. But there's just so many of them. The horde passes by, a parade of the walking dead, growling and shrieking and snapping their jaws. Once they are gone, Maya and I move into the wrecked store. Many people had the same idea, apparently, because the place has been ransacked. There are still people inside, gathering up items and looking at us warily. Still, we move through the clutter, picking up items that will be of use. There are some hiking backpacks left, and we grab them, using them to hold things like fire starters, pocket knives, and lengths of paracord. All the water filters and the camping meals have been cleaned out, and so have all the guns.
What about hatchets?
Maya asks as we look around for weapons.
Good idea, I say.
And we move through the store toward where I think hatchets will be. But as we pass a climbing section, I spot a lone ice axe hanging from a rack. I step into the aisle and grab the piece of equipment ice climbers use, thinking it will do nicely as a zombie killer. Behind me, Maya lets out a frightened squeal. I spin around and see a man with long, dark hair and wild eyes holding a rifle to my girlfriend's head.
Give me that thing,
the man says, gesturing at the ice axe.
You already have a gun,
I say, trying to keep my voice calm.
You won't be able to use both, and we have nothing.
I said give it to me.
Maya looks at me, pleading. I nod my head and shift to hold out the item to the man. There's a flash of quick movement, and the guy's head is yanked backward by his hair. He fires the gun as the zombies pull him to the ground, the bullet ending up somewhere in the ceiling. The man screams as the zombie clamps down on his nose. I know the noise will bring more zombies, so I step forward and slam the sharp end of the ice axe into the zombie's head. The thing goes stiff for a moment, then it goes limp. I step over and put my foot against the rifle, keeping the guy from using it as I wrench the axe out of the zombie's head. The guy is still screaming. Plus, he's been bitten. He's as good as dead. So I use the ice axe on him, and he goes quiet. The sounds of gunfire and shouting and cars crashing and the occasional explosion are still coming from outside. So I hope we won't have any zombies coming for us soon. Maybe they didn't hear the screaming thanks to all the noise. I hand the ice axe to a stunned Maya and grab the rifle and the guy's backpack. It contains bullets, some food, a couple of water filters, and a well-worn stuffed bear. Tossing the bear out, I take the backpack.
We need to go. Out the back.
As we move that way, a woman's scream pierces the air, much louder than the man's was. Maya and I turn, seeing a woman and a little girl standing nearby, staring at the dead man with the long hair. Suddenly, the bear makes sense. It must belong to the little girl.
Stop screaming!
I shout.
You killed him!
The woman screams.
You killed Jamie!
She reaches behind her back for something. She must have a pistol. I drop the backpack and rack the bolt on the rifle, ejecting the shell and loading another one. The woman brings a revolver out, and I have no time to aim the rifle. I shoot from the hip, hitting the woman in the face. She falls to the floor, blood splattering her daughter.
Let's move,
I say to Maya, picking up the backpack I dropped. My girlfriend looks at me like I'm insane.
We can't just leave her here.
I glance at the little girl, who looks at her dead parents for a long moment before her face screws up and she starts bawling. Maya steps toward her, but I stick the barrel of the rifle out, keeping her from moving.
We won't last an hour with her, I say. It's not happening. It's suicide.
The girl's bawling is getting louder. If the gunshots haven't already attracted zombies, the crying will soon.
We're not just leaving her,
Maya says again, shoving me and heading toward the girl. I quickly load another shell into the rifle. I take aim, and I fire. The crying stops.
There,
I say.
Problem solved. Now let's fucking go, Maya.
Running footsteps come from the front of the store. Zombies coming fast. Maya looks at me with an expression I've never seen before. It's not hard to read, though. Disgust, shock, and maybe a little hate. But she hears the footsteps, too. And as I move toward the back of the store, loading another bullet into the chamber, she follows me. She'll come around eventually. Her old way of thinking about the world will change. And when that happens, she'll thank me. I'm confident she'll come around. But if she doesn't, I would hate to have to kill her too.
Holy shit!
I say, slamming the door just a split second before bodies crash into it on the other side. Ezra appears from behind me with the metal bar we use as a barricade. He sets it across the door, into the brackets we installed on either side. It's a metal door, and the zombies will give up pretty soon, once they no longer hear us. Facing each other and breathing hard, Ezra and I smile, and then break into laughter.
That was close,
he says.
Too close,
I say. We were just on a supply run, but we'd been surprised by a small group of zombies when we were still a good quarter of a mile away from our building. Things just got out of hand from there. Before we knew it, we were surrounded. We had to jump onto the line of cars we used as barricades because, somehow, a bunch of zombies had gotten past them. So we were running on the tops of these cars, scrambling up onto the SUVs and vans, while these zombies were following us. Both Ezra and I fell at least once and had zombies biting the pads we wore around our legs and arms. But once we got to a place where the horde wasn't so thick, we jumped off the cars, using our weapons to bash any zombies that got close. Now, as we head toward the stairs, I place my hammer, coated with blood and brains, in its little slot by the door. Ezra does the same with his hatchet. And then we head upstairs to take off the pads and go through the supplies we gathered. We stop in the living room at the very top of the apartment. There are two couches set up in the room, facing each other. There's no electricity for television anymore, meaning we have to entertain each other. So we lounge on the couches and tell stories when we're not struggling to survive. I sit on the brown faux leather couch, while Ezra sits on the dark green one. We generally don't use guns when we're out, unless we absolutely have to because they make too much noise and attract tons of zombies. But we keep them on us just in case. I set my Sig Sauer pistol down on a little table next to my couch, and Ezra does the same with his Ruger. Even before the apocalypse, my brother and I spent a lot of time together. We've always been close, and people would often mistake us for twins. But we're not twins, we're a year apart. As I remove the pad on my left arm, I see something that sends my heart into overdrive. The padding has a tear in it, and there's blood coming from a minor wound underneath. I twist the pad so the tear isn't visible to my brother and glance up at him. He's removing the pads on his shins. He looks up at me.
What's up?
Nothing, I lie.
I was just thinking about Mom and Dad.
He nods sadly and goes back to his work. What am I doing? I think. I need to tell him. I'm going to turn in less than an hour. I have to tell him. We've always said that we'd let the other one do the job if we ever got bit. We made each other promise. I knew this day might come. But now that it's here, I can't seem to find the words to tell Ezra. Staring down at my lap, I'm overcome with sadness. It's a sadness so heavy and unrelenting that my thoughts jumble into a despair, black as night and sharp as a razor. Then I look up at Ezra and see that he's pointing his gun at me.
You're bit, aren't you?
He asks. I nod, tears spilling down my unshaven cheeks.
God damn it,
he sighs.
Well, let's get this over with. Downstairs?
I nod again. Ezra keeps the gun pointed at me as I move to get up. But I catch a glimpse of red on my brother's shin. There's a crescent of bloody marks just above the top of his boot. Freezing where I am on the edge of the couch, I point a hand at the wound. Ezra leans down and looks at it, gun still pointed at me.
Son of a bitch,
he says. I move to reach for my gun, just in case he turns before me. But Ezra stops me.
Ah,
he says.
Don't do it. What do you mean, don't do it? You're bit too. Maybe it's just a scrape. Maybe it's not actually a bite. I can see the teeth marks, Ezra. It's a bite.
I reach for my gun again, and Ezra fires his, shooting a hole in the couch, inches from me. Shouting in anger, I reach for and grab my gun. Ezra fires again, this time hitting me in the stomach. The impact of the bullet reverberating through my body with sickening force. I level my gun at him and fire, shooting my brother in the right arm, halfway between the elbow and shoulder.
What the fuck?
He says, trying to raise his gun again. But his arm isn't working properly, and he can barely move his hand.
Don't do it,
I say. The pain suddenly comes in a wave, and I cry out, clutching my stomach with my free hand.
Oh God, it hurts.
Ezra reaches across and grabs his gun with his left hand. But before he can get it up, I fire again, hitting him in the chest. He goes limp and slumps down, the gun falling to the floor. The pain in my stomach intensifies, and it's all I can do to stay conscious. But it doesn't work for long. Darkness takes me, and I pass out. I have no idea how much time has passed when consciousness comes screaming back. I wake as the immense pain in my gut is joined by an awful pain in my neck. I open my eyes to see Ezra, now a zombie, ripping a chunk of flesh from my neck. Raising my gun, I shoot him in the head. He falls to the floor between the two couches. As I put the barrel to my head, something occurs to me. I should have changed by now from the first bite. I set the weapon down in my lap. I'm losing blood quickly from both my stomach wound and my neck. I don't have long. I adjust the pad on my left arm to get a better look at the bite, and I see a small sliver of glass that I didn't see before. It was hidden by the pad. I remove the pad and the piece of glass and look at the wound. It's a cut. A cut from a piece of glass from when I fell onto a car's back window. How did I not remember that? I smile. It's kind of funny, actually. Hilarious, really. It makes perfect sense that Ezra and I would go out this way, even if one of us didn't have to. The building shook from an explosion. I had to reach out and steady myself on a table, cluttered with research equipment.
They're through the wall!
Bellamy shouted from over by the boarded up windows. He was peering out through a small hole designed for this very purpose.
And they're using Zom strapped with explosives!
Sheena and I looked at each other over the research table.
It's the Reapers,
she said, although we were all thinking it.
We need to get out of here,
I said.
Right now, if they get you.
They're here for the vaccine,
she said, heading over to the fridge where the few samples of the newly finished vaccine were. A vaccine that could end the hell we'd been living through for the past 5 years. But some people, like the leader of the Reapers, didn't want the world to change. He was ruthless and powerful, and he didn't want to give that power up.
How did they know?
I asked.
Who didn't show up today?
Sheena said. Of course.
Luther,
I said.
That son of a bitch. Get down!
Bellamy shouted a second before the boarded up windows exploded, sending me and Sheena flying. I smashed into a wall and came to rest in a pile, surrounded by shredded wood and broken glass. Scrambling over toward Sheena and the vaccine vial she'd been holding, I quickly saw that her left leg was badly broken. Shattered vials were all around. I couldn't see a single intact one. Sheena moved, looking up at me while the dust was still settling all around us. She smiled and opened her right fist, revealing a single intact vial.
Go,
she said, blood spilling out of her mouth.
Go now. Your notes,
I said.
Are they in your office?
Gunshots sounded from down the hall.
There's no time,
Sheena said.
Go.
I took the vial and shared a look with the brilliant scientist. Then I got to my feet and ran out into the hallway. Keeping the vial in my left hand, I pulled my pistol out of my holster with my right. When I got to the stairwell, I slammed through the door and came face to face with one of the Reapers. His face was scarred up, denoting him as a warrior. Not slowing, I barreled into him with my shoulder as he tried to get his rifle up. He slammed into the wall and fell down the short flight of stairs toward the first floor. I shot him twice as I made my way down. Then I stopped and grabbed his rifle, holstering my weapon and sticking the vial in my left pocket, hoping it wouldn't break. But if I died, all would be lost anyway. I had to take the chance. The rifle was a military M4, capable of fully automatic fire. I switched it from three-round burst to full auto and moved down into the basement of the college research facility. There were maintenance tunnels under the buildings, leading all around the campus. Upstairs, another explosion rocked the building. As I ran through the tunnel toward the next building, I noticed I was bleeding. Looking down, I saw a piece of glass about the size of a cell phone from the old world. It was sticking out of my abdomen just above my belt line. Ignoring it, I hurried on. While we had fortified the research buildings of the campus as best we could, it wasn't where we stayed. We had a much more defensible place a few miles away. Somewhere that the leader of the Reapers, Killian, wouldn't dare attack. Not unless he wanted his troops decimated. We had a stash of bicycles stored outside a far building, just in case something like this happened. I made it to the building with no problems and stepped outside. I couldn't see anyone around, and all the bikes were there. As I stepped over to them, I heard a scuffling sound from behind me at the corner of the building. I half turned, seeing a gigantic man with a badly scarred face, wearing full tactical gear and body armor. He was pointing a pump shotgun at me.
Killian,
I said.
So predictable,
Killian said.
Did you not think Luther knew about these bikes? He told me everything.
Stupid, I should have known.
I don't have anything,
I said to him.
It was all destroyed when your people shot an RPG at the building.
Killian laughed.
You think that will keep me from killing you?
I shrugged. There was no way I could get my weapon up before he pulled the trigger. Even if I could, he was wearing body armor. Only a headshot would do. But then I saw some movement from behind him. A shambling figure came into view, about 15 yards beyond Killian.
You know the problem with using zombies as walking bombs?
I asked.
What the hell are you talking about?
The problem is, they're unpredictable. You never know where they'll wander off to.
Some stupid last words,
Killian said, raising his shotgun to blow me away. His finger whitened on the trigger, but just before he fired, the zombie with a bomb strapped to its chest kicked a rock that went skittering across the ground. Without moving the shotgun, Killian looked over his shoulder. I moved quickly, stepping to the right, raising my M4. Killian fired his shotgun at me. I fired my M4, but not at Killian, who was covered with body armor. I shot at the zombie, at the bomb on its chest. It exploded about 10 yards behind me. I was thrown to the ground, but I sat up quickly and looked around. Killian was in pieces, lots of them. Wincing, I got to my feet and looked down at my injuries. His shotgun had been loaded with buckshot, and I'd taken several of the small balls in my left leg. But the wounds weren't my major concern. I didn't think they were life-threatening. I reached into the left pocket and felt for the vial. It was still intact, despite the holes through my pants from the buckshot. I sighed and limped over to the bikes. Pedaling would be a bitch, but it was well worth it. Killian was dead, and we had a vaccine. Things were looking up.